what your country can do for you.
You shall not crucify mankind upon a cross of gold.
I resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
Government is not the solution to our problem.
Do not have sexual relations for that
constitute an axis of evil.
You still want to see us fall backwards.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
And it's time for All Things Political, which you always hear Mondays at 9 o'clock. We're happy to have Ken Rudin with us. NPR's political junkie joins the conversation for the first hour of our show today. He's been a political junkie for over 30 years. You hear him frequently on NPR doing reports. He contributes every Wednesday to the Talk of the Nation political junkie segment. He has a weekly political junkie column on NPR.org reviewing the politics of the week. And he also, we'll talk about this later in this hour, added to his duties by becoming part of the network's State Impact Project. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Ken, and so much to talk about with not many days left now until the big election. We'll look at a number of issues, how things are faring right now, if Governor Romney has been able to move beyond the 47% comment, early voting starting today in some states. How important is early voting? What about the challenges to those voter ID laws? President Obama was in Milwaukee on Saturday. We'll look at the state of Wisconsin and what's happening in other battleground states. Are the polls continuing to show what they did last week, or are we seeing some changes? Our phone number is always is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, and you can always tweet to @KDunnShow. Ken Rudin, hello.
Hello, Kathleen. Are we going to talk about the Yankees?
I can't believe you asked me that first. No. No, Ken, we're not. I'm really sorry. We could talk about the Brewers, but maybe at the very end.
How about that Prince Fielder?
We miss him.
I mean, you're doing well without him, actually.
I know. We really are. It's exciting. It's an exciting end of the season. And an exciting time now for you politically. You must be in your glory.
Well, you know, something that I don't see any change because it's been really nonstop and intense for months and months now. But what's the strangest thing of all this, and I've been doing this for a long, long time, is that nothing seems to have changed, at least the polls. There is some slight pulling away we've seen since the conventions for President Obama, although nationally the numbers are pretty close. But for the most part, finding an undecided voter, finding somebody who's still trying to make up his or her mind, that's become pretty difficult.
So we're going to skip the undecided voter panels this year and just not listen to those people?
No, because that, I mean, if Mitt Romney is trailing, and he certainly is trailing in the projected electoral vote count, if he's going to make up a difference, even if it's 2% or 5% of those still making up their minds, he's got to get them. I mean, often the undecided usually goes against the incumbent. So that is good news for Romney. But again, you know, in those toss-up states that he's got to win, the Colorados, the Floridas, the Nevadas, the Ohios, the Virginias of the world, the Wisconsins of the world, certainly, the president still has a slight lead, or at least Romney is not ahead. And that's not good news with 43 days to go. But again, we still have the debates coming up. We have a lot of things that could change. Some insanity going on in the Mideast could change the calculation. As somebody once said in baseball, it ain't over until it's over.
Yeah, right. NPR had a report, maybe you heard it this morning as I was driving in, saying that rural counties are going for Romney in a much larger way than rural counties did 4 years ago. Is that significant, Ken?
Well, yes and no. I mean, look, Romney has to do better, and he will do better, feeling is, than John McCain did 4 years ago, and for obvious reason. I think the Republican brand was in big, big trouble in 2008. President Bush's numbers were down. The war in Iraq was extremely unpopular. The economy was awful. The price of food, the price of gasoline, projections about future employment. But the thing is, the last 4 years, you know, I mean, whether you agree or not with Mitt Romney's question, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago, that the economy is not good. 8.1% unemployment is still the highest for an incumbent president. It's very rare that an incumbent gets reelected with such high unemployment. And the job creation numbers have not been good. And that's what's driving Republicans nuts. If the economy is so bad, if things are so terrible, and that, well, we could debate whether they are or not, then why aren't we beating this guy? And I think that's why there's a lot of second guessing about what's going on with the Romney campaign strategy.
Well, how do you answer that question? Why aren't they? Many have said that this was the Republicans' year to win. Why aren't they?
Well, I mean, some people, of course, buy the argument, and it's a decent argument that that you need more than 4 years to help undo what President Obama was. The cards he was dealt with in January of 2009, although Obama said from the beginning that, you know, he never said, I need 8 years to do this job. He said, I'll do it in four. But I mean, at the same time, there's also a strong reservoir of good feeling for the president, whereas there never has been that for Mitt Romney. Even the Republican base has been kind of wary about him. Do you remember during the primaries, there was always an anybody but Mitt alternative going on, whether it be Herman Cain or Michelle Bachmann or Rick Perry or Newt Gingrich or Rick Santorum, that went on and on and on for the longest time. And you know, he, for somebody who is so calculated and so careful, Mitt Romney seems to be sticking his foot in it quite too many times. You know, the 47% quote, I don't know if that was a gaffe. Of course, you know, he probably believes that, and he does believe that. And I think what he was saying was that there are some people, I'm not going to win no matter what. But he said it so indelicately, and he says a lot of things so indelicately that, you know, people who was trying to make up their minds, they hear him say things like this, and they scratch their head and say, what is he saying?
Can he move, and do you think he has moved beyond that 47% comment, Ken?
Well, I do. I mean, there's always something like, you know, the corporations or people. There's always just look, Obama ultimately got away from, you know, those people who cling to their guns and religion when he said that gaffe in 2008. Now, the good news for Obama is that he said it in April of 2008, and not in late September when we're getting to crunch time. So can he evolve from it? Sure. I mean, these debates coming up could change the whole dynamic. But again, as we've seen through the time when Romney clinched the Republican nomination through the conventions, his numbers haven't changed that much. There was a bit of a bump coming out of Tampa, but not much of one, and it certainly disappeared once the Democrats had their convention. Something major has to happen. We have seen major shifts in the past, but not many. I remember, because, you know, even though I was only 6 months old back then, but 1968, Richard Nixon had a 15-point lead at the end of September. It was an 8-point lead at the end of October. On Election Day, he was up by 2 or 3 points, and he only won by a half a point over Hubert Humphrey in 68. So things can change. Gerald Ford was down. Michael Dukakis was up 17 points. Remember Michael Dukakis?
Sure.
President Dukakis, after the 1988 Democratic convention. So things can change, but for some reason this year things have not been, and Romney's obviously hoping for a sea change come October, but September has been a disastrous month for him.
Let's look at the Senate for a moment. The Democrats wanting to keep control of the Senate. The Republicans would of course love to take the Senate. How are races shaken out for that?
Well, the numbers suggest that the Republicans are in good shape. There are 33 seats up. The Democrats are controlling 23 of them, so including the two independents. So on paper, at least, numerically at least, the Republicans have a good shot. But at the same time, the Republicans are no better than dead even in Massachusetts with Elizabeth Warren versus Republican Scott Brown. In Maine, they're certainly going to lose that seat, almost certainly going to lose that seat because of Olympia Snowe's retirement. And then a lot of the states that the Republicans were convinced they were going to take, you know, pick up, like North Dakota, look what's going on in Missouri with Todd Akin and the legitimate rape comment he made. That turned an almost a certain victory into an almost certain defeat. So Republicans on paper, should be doing much better than they have, and they still can do really well. They need a net gain of 4 seats to take control of the Senate, 3 if Romney wins, because then Paul Ryan, vice president, would break the tie. But Wisconsin, which Tommy Thompson had a lead not too long ago, that's pretty much come down to pretty much even lately. North Dakota, the Republican candidate there, is underperforming. Nevada is dead even, so... It's it's a lot of nail biting with, as you say, 43 days to go.
Let's spend a few more minutes on Wisconsin. The numbers there really switched. He had Tommy Thompson a substantial lead about 2 months ago, and then the numbers went the other way. I don't know how accurate the polls are here, but how do you explain that?
Well, almost everybody I've spoken to said that the Wisconsin, and the other, I think the big Wisconsin poll I saw was the University of Marquette Law School that had Obama up by 14 right. over Romney, had Tammy Baldwin up pretty sizably over Tommy Thompson. Let me go to the Senate race for a second. And one thing I think is true is that Tommy Thompson spent a lot of money trying to ward off his conservative opponents in the primary, and he did so. And do I think that Tommy Thompson is the best Republican that they could have put up for the Senate seat? I do. I think he would be stronger than Mark Newman and the other conservatives who probably would not have won statewide. But at the same time, Tommy Thompson seems to have disappeared since he won the primary. I think he's been spending a lot of time raising money, whereas Tammy Baldwin has a ton of money. She was unopposed in the primary. She has a national basically constituency. While in my gut tells me that she may be too, quote, liberal. This sounds like Michael Dukakis, George Bush language, but too liberal to win. She's certainly holding her own, and stranger things have happened.
Mm-hmm. Early voting started today in how many places?
Well, it's a bunch of states. I mean, they move up. I've never been a fan of early voting. Now, I understand we want to get everybody to the polls, and we will do everything we can to get them to the polls. Not everybody can make it on November 6th, for example. But, for example, if a lot of people are voting early, what's the point of the debates? I mean, the debates start October 3rd, and there are 4 debates, 3 presidential, 1 vice presidential. If people are voting now, they're not going to be able to see the dynamic change. And, we always say that had Hubert Humphrey had a week more in 1968, he could have beaten Richard Nixon. I kind of think that let the candidates have the entire time to make their case. Let them have the debates. Let them see how they would see the next 4 years and how they saw the last 4 years. Don't vote in September. Don't vote in early October. But I understand the need, the desire to get as many people to the polls as possible. Ken, a lot of P's in that sentence.
Ken Rudin's Political Junkie is our guest for All Things Political. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, or you can send a tweet at K Dunn Show. Let's start our phone calls with Willem in Colfax. Hi, Willem. Willem, are you there?
Yes.
Go right ahead.
Oh, yes. I just wanted to say something about what do you think the effects is going to be on this last. I imagine the spending is projected to be, as much as 6-1 for Romney as Obama for these 501c4 groups. They're considered social welfare groups, so they can give unlimited amount of secret tax-exempt money to the campaign. In fact, the PACs can, the C4... The social welfare part of a PAC can give money secretly to without disclosing who the money is coming from to the PAC, back to the PAC as a contribution, and get a tax write-off on top of that. There was a really interesting program last night with Bill Moyers, of a Republican person, who described this whole system and how it works and how it's going to corrupt our political system. And this Adelman, he's I've heard him say that he was going to spend $200 million to get Romney elected. And the same people that run that ad against, the Swift Boat ad and all that. And I'm old enough to remember Nixon. And the reason that Nixon, I think, was elected was that he pledged to end the war, and that got him a lot of votes.
Ken.
Well, we could talk about why Richard Nixon was elected. I mean, the Democrats helped self-destruct as well. I mean, I do remember Nixon saying, those who have not had a chance in 4 years to produce peace do not deserve another chance. And, of course, McGovern tried to use that against him in 72. Now, I understand that part. But having said that, the issue is not so much about whether the money is secret. I mean, these are important things, but right now with 43 days to go, the real question is now, how effective will they be? And what I've been seeing, what I've been seeing, it seems like that the stories about Romney outraising Obama is almost not as true on first glance, not as true as it is on first glance. In other words, there are a lot of the Republican money has gone to the Republican National Committee, which has since given money to Senate and congressional candidates. Look, there's no reason to feel sorry for President Obama on the money front. He will be well-funded. And what surprises me the most is that if you go into the swing states, the key states, the Wisconsins, the Colorados, the Virginias of the world, or of the United States, President Obama is outspending Mitt Romney in those states. And so everybody's saying, well, you know, Romney has all this money and he's going to unleash it at the end. But the end may be too late. And I kind of think that, well, I don't know what Romney's waiting for, but almost every state, it seems like Obama has a clear lead in spending in the swing states. I mean, look, California is not up for grabs. Texas is not up for grabs. We know where those states are. New York is not up for grabs. We know where those states are going. But again, those toss-up states, those six or seven states which will determine the election, Obama is really on the airwaves a lot, and certainly I don't know how much time there is left to buy up in the next 43 days.
Do you feel sorry for us, the American people, on the money front, Ken? Is it way over the top?
Well, do I think so? Yes. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, do I think that, you know, there should be limits on spending? You know, there's a constitutional question about that, and the Supreme Court has ruled on that, too. So I think there is. But I will tell you one thing, that maybe it's not bad to live in California and New York and Texas, because I live in the Maryland suburbs, and while Maryland is not competitive at all, it's a solid blue state. I still get the same TV that Virginia gets, and Virginia, of course, is a swing state. Until Obama won it in the last time, no Democrat had won it since Lyndon Johnson in 64. So Virginia is an amazing battleground, and I'm sure the same thing is going on in Wisconsin. We're bombarded nonstop, and not only with commercials, but negative commercials.
Very
this
negative
guy stinks,
this year.
This guy stinks, and that guy stinks, and you stink, and you stink.
I know.
You started, and I know you are, but what am I?
I know.
And they like, yikes. I mean... I never want election day to end because I love it so much. But sometimes, you know, I want something nice and quiet, like watching Homeland.
I want them to be funny. I wish they would do funny gads. Nobody does
that
anymore.
You know something? They're not funny. And part of it, it can be clever, and they can do something. And say, wow, that was a good one. But now I watch, you know, I'm so and so, and I approve this message, and you know, my opponent is a jerk, you know, and it just seems so like, is that the best we can do? Is that all that money can buy? I mean, wow.
Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie, is our guest for All Things Political. Our phone number, we'll take more calls momentarily, is 800-486-8655. You can also send email at talk@WPR.org or use that Twitter, that brand new thing. Our Twitter handle is @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today, the presidential candidates may not be talking about this very much, but we will. According to a report last week, the amount of ice in the Arctic Ocean went to an all-time low this year. We'll be speaking with a researcher from the National Snow and Ice Data Center. Ken Rudin is our guest. Sam in Madison, hi.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, Ken.
Hi, Sam.
Thank you for taking my call. First of all, Ken, I've enjoyed your contributions on NPR very much. Thank you for recording.
Sam, thank you so much.
I have a comment and a question. I am not a U.S. citizen, Ken. I can't vote. So I've been watching the American electoral process for almost 10 years now. I've watched three national elections and many state elections in three different states. And quite frankly, the conclusion that I've come up to is that I think every 4 years, the politicians and the media put on these theatrics to give the illusion that Americans have a choice. I think if you look at the fiscal policies, the foreign policies, especially the domestic policies of Democrats and Republicans, they're very, very similar, except for the social issues, because Democrats are for gay rights and abortion rights and stuff like that. Republicans are not. So that's my comment, and I would like to for you to comment on that. The question I have is that I'm wondering what goes on into the mind of an independent. How do they make their decisions? And that is related to what I just said, which is that I don't think there's a difference between both Democrats and Republicans as far as the non-social issues go. And I don't think independents vote on social issues. Those issues such as gay rights, abortion rights, and religious rights go deep in us. Either we are for them or we are against them. So they probably are not voting on social issues. So what really influences them to make a decision, maybe perhaps the money problem that you were just talking about, is being called independence. But, I mean, you being a political junkie and know much more about this, how do independents really make their decision?
Thank you, Sam.
Well, there were a lot of questions there, and they were all interesting. First of all, you said that abortion is like you're either for it or against it. I don't even know if it's that simple. I know there are some people who vote based on abortion. I know perhaps I think more people vote who are pro-life than they are pro-choice. Look, everybody's pro-life, and these are just terms we're throwing out. But, I mean, I don't think abortion is that simple, I think. But anyway, several things. First of all, you make a very good point that on foreign policy, on national security policy, there may not be much difference between Obama and Romney or the Democrats and Republicans. There are still allegations of torture, or at least, eavesdropping. There's some questions about national security and constitutional rights. There were drone attacks going on. We saw that with both administrations, both Bush and Obama. So there are a lot in common. I would say there is a big difference on Israel. I think both, of course, are friends of Israel, but I think Romney is going to be tougher to make the case that he's going to be a fair arbiter in the Mideast because he has thrown his lot with Netanyahu. He has said, as we heard from those leaked tapes, that he sees that the Palestinians are not interested in negotiating at all. So I kind of think that in that sense, Obama is at least more of an honest arbiter in the Mideast than Romney. Although, as we've seen, I don't know what good that's doing because Obama clearly seems to have misread the Arab Street. Our policy in Egypt doesn't seem like it's benefiting anybody. So blah, blah, blah. Now, as far as how do you make your mind up, I think a lot of it has to do with a comfort factor. I think that the thing that's driving Republicans nuts is while the issues may be on their side, while people are more and more nervous about the economy, about future employment, about the next 4 years, they just like Obama more. Romney still, for better or for worse, is portrayed as the candidate of the rich, the candidate of the corporations, the candidate who doesn't feel like I feel. I mean, whatever you thought of Bill Clinton, and he had a lot of problems in 92 with his personal life and his draft status and all that stuff, he had a way of looking you in the eye and feeling your pain. And I think Obama just does that better than Mitt Romney. So all things put aside, forget about the differences on abortion, forget about the foreign policy stuff. I think if there's a comfort factor, that's what's really helping Obama, and that's what Romney has to overcome.
As you were talking about likability, I was thinking about other presidents who we didn't like and elected, and I'm thinking that we didn't like Richard Nixon very much, or did we? Maybe my memory is faulty here.
Well, we certainly didn't like him in 1960, dead even with John Kennedy. We didn't love him in 68, but there was a Vietnam War going on. There was unrest in the streets. Nixon promised to change that. In 72, we had him as 4 years as president. George McGovern was seen as part of the radical left. I mean, he didn't even know what kind of vice president he wanted to pick. I mean, there was just so many problems with McGovern. And so Nixon, so unlikable, dislikable, whatever, won 49 states there. But at the same time, Al Gore, we always talked about the Gore-Bush race, that, Gore may have had the issues on his side, but Gore, during the debates, had this, this contemptuous sigh that everybody, the media, made such a big deal over. And that election was also dead even, too, Gore getting more votes than Bush. But maybe that turned the tide in some states with some voters saying that Bush, I would go bowling with Bush. I would have a beer with Bush. The thought of picking your next president, who you want to have beer with, who you want to go bowling with. I mean, although right. I think going bowling with is a big deal, because that's why all the candidates, everybody's in the gutter. No, I'm sorry. I just
Yeah.
I won't use that joke again.
All right. Thank you. No, it's all right, Ken. That's why we like you. That's why you're such a good guest. Yeah, Hugh, exactly. Hugh in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. First, let me respond to a previous caller, because on the social issues, I'm on the left, but I do not vote Democrat, and I certainly am not going to vote for Obama and Hillary Clinton. Their foreign policy is a disaster. It's shown by every riot in the Arab world. His pro-Muslim policy has blown up in his face and resulted in the death of an ambassador. And they lied about it. They lied about it. They said it was a protest in Libya. It was not a protest. It was a terrorist attack, just like this administration lied about the Muslim who killed the soldiers down in Texas and call it a workplace violence. We have terrorists. And an advisor to Hillary Clinton has connections to the Muslim Brotherhood. Michelle Bachmann, whom the sneering left-wing press denies, says we have too much pro-Muslim influence in this government, and goes right to the top with Obama. He promised his administration would be so great with the Muslim world. Well, we see President Morsi come demanding that we basically change our constitution if we're going to be friends with Egypt. And why are we giving them over $1 billion in aid?
All right, Hugh. Is a couple questions here. Number one is, how much information do we have about the protest that killed Ambassador Stevens? Take on his comments that this administration is too pro-Muslim. And the third question, which I wanted to ask you when you were talking about his misreading the Arab street, how that will play into this election. Are people saying, wait a second, we don't really have a good policy direction here in the Middle East?
Well, regarding the last thing, I think what you're saying is absolutely true. And I think Hugh's remarks about Morsi and our relationship with Egypt is, in fact, correct, in the sense that when Obama was elected, the word on George W. Bush was that he was this reckless cowboy who was just doing his own thing, and Obama would have these great relationships with countries around the world. And here we have this tragedy, this terrible violence in Libya with the killing of Ambassador Stevens, the violence in Egypt, and Morsi, who gets $2 billion a year from the U.S., Morsi just sat and just there was no response from him at all, because he didn't want to inflame the Islamists at the same time, trying to show that he's an American puppet. So, I mean, so the kind of results we expected from $2 billion a year in aid to Egypt, we're not getting. But as far as the other thing said is about the Muslim influence in the government, what Michelle Bachmann said, she referred to this woman who works on Hillary Clinton's staff as having ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. She, her name is escaping me. She's the wife of former Congressman Anthony Weiner, and she's a Muslim. But she doesn't have ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. John McCain stood up on the floor in the Senate and said that it was just so reckless. He didn't mention Michelle Bachmann by name, but it's so reckless to make those kind of charges. So there is one thing. Yes, does he have a fairly inept policy in the Mideast? I think he does, and I think that's what was obscured by Mitt Romney's kind of premature pronouncements about it. I think there is a weakness in his foreign policy. But you have to be careful that it's one thing to say that you have an ineffective policy and you're not telling the truth about what caused the violence and the death of Stevens. But you cross a line, I think, when you're saying that there's a Muslim influence, that there are Muslims who were taking over the government, or Muslim influence in the Obama administration. I think that's where you cross a line, and that's the mistake you don't want to make.
And one thing for sure, that whoever is president the next 4 years is going to have his hands full when it comes to what's going on in each of those countries in the Middle East. It's a bit of a mess, isn't it? And it will be.
It is, and I don't remember, I don't remember any president being as pro-Israel, or at least pro the Likud wing of Israel as Mitt Romney. So he's going to have his hands full, but I don't know what Obama's credibility in the Mideast is. I mean, you saw those big crowds when he went there, and everybody loved him and everybody was going to like it, all that stuff. And yet ultimately, when you think of what's happened, there's still ton. I mean, what happened after the release of that video, and I'm not blaming all this violence on the video. I think there's just anti-American sentiment that's out there anyway, and they just took advantage of it. But that was supposed to change, or at least the President Obama made us feel that things would change with him in the White House, and ultimately that has not changed.
Yeah, you know, I was listening to Salman Rushdie, who will be with us, I think, next week, over the weekend, and he was talking about that anti-American sentiment being whipped up by people who want more power in the Middle East, and what do you do about that, right?
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, we don't have answers. I even wonder if Morsi has answers. I mean, he, you know, the president of Egypt, he did dismiss all the military, the top members of the military, and that made the Islamists very happy. But you know, for whatever, you know, I'm not defending Mubarak's authoritarian regime at all, but somehow there seemed to, that the world wasn't falling apart in that part of the world, and now it looks as unstable as ever.
Mm-hmm. Sarah in Zion, Illinois. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Ken. I'm wondering if you could set me straight on the status of the various voter ID laws that have been passed, and some have been overturned, and I especially was wondering about the one that was banning or shutting down the Sunday voting.
I didn't see anything about Sunday voting, but I did see a lot of challenges to the stringent voter ID stuff. Most of them have been thrown out. And I know in Florida, that's one of the things that's been thrown out. And of course, a lot of people are worrying about that, because if the Democrats are spending a lot of money on get out the vote efforts, you don't know how effective that will be if there is a clampdown on suspected non-citizens, not registered folks to vote. It's going to be tough, I think, in some swing states. Obviously, it's a very important issue. But, you know, as we've seen, you know, all these investigations of people who were allegedly non-voters or dead or everything, all those thousands and thousands of suspected non-voters are really turning out to be a couple of dozen or maybe a couple of hundred. So the problem doesn't seem to be as serious as people thought. I think the courts are realizing it, that the court may be realizing that these ID laws are more about suppressing the vote than making it an honest vote. I don't know. It's too soon to tell really what kind of a difference it will be, because even if the ID votes go along, there can be some voters who are afraid to go to the polls because they're questioning whether they're eligible or not. I don't think we'll really know the effect until after November 6th.
I think there was something, I heard this over the weekend, that the Sunday voting in Florida would no longer take place. I don't know if there's a challenge to that, but there was some concern that in churches, a lot of people would, you'd go to church and then you'd go to vote. So I don't know if that's being challenged, but I think that was part of their voter ID law. So
I think so, too. And I think that the Sunday voting is gone. But again, you know, I don't know if there were challenges to that as well.
Sarah, thanks so much for the call. John in Manitowoc. Ken Rudin, by the way, is our guest here on the Ideas Network, political junkie for NPR, and it's All Things Political, which is what you're listening to. Hi, John.
Good morning. Recently, during the Recall Walker campaign, my son Jonah got very involved with that and was offered a paid position in Montana to work for the John Tester senatorial campaign. So he's been on the ground, postponed his first semester of school, and he's very excited about that. He says that it's an important race for the Senate. Could you comment on that, please, Ken?
Yeah, it's funny. I know two other college kids who, I guess, they wanted to volunteer for Democratic Senate candidates, and they sent them to Montana also for the Tester campaign. I mean, my first reaction is, boy, that's a beaut. Well, anyway, that's a very funny joke in Montana. But I look, John Tester won by the barest amounts in 2006 in a very good Democratic year. And he beat a senator who was very close to Jack Abramoff. So Tester has not been the most. It's a very tough state for the Democrats. Mitt Romney is going to win overwhelmingly in Montana. John Tester has really distanced himself enough from President Obama that he can't be portrayed as an Obama clone. But having said that, the Republican candidate is a congressman. Now, Montana only has one member of the House, so he runs statewide every 2 years. And that's Denny Rehberg, who is running a good campaign. He has a lot of money. He's more focused than he had been early in the campaign. And he can't be dismissed as a Tea Party fringe candidate. He's certainly a conservative, but he's minding his P's and Q's. I kind of think that, you know, it could go either way. I really right now see it as a toss up, but It wouldn't surprise, if I had to guess, I think Reberg has a good shot, one of the few Democratic incumbents who could go down. But again, right now, a true toss-up.
John, thanks very much for the call. You look at polls closely. At what point do we look at polls which seem to be going Democratic the last week, at least since the 47%? Do you think that there will be wild fluctuations in the next couple of weeks, Ken? And is there a point at which we say, oh, we're so close to the election, these must be fairly accurate?
Well, you know, that's a good question, and I'm very aware of that question, because 4 years ago, even though the polls showed Barack Obama, then candidate Obama, moving ahead in states like Virginia and Indiana and Ohio and Florida, I still said, well, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's a racial back. You know, sometimes you say you're going to vote for a black candidate, but you really don't. Sometimes people say it's nice. Maybe people thought it would be nice to vote for Obama, but ultimately they would go back to their Republican roots. And yet all those states did go for Obama. So I predicted 4 years ago that Obama was not going to win by a large enough margin, as a big a margin as he did. So having said that, I'm looking at states like Virginia and Ohio and Florida and Iowa, states like that, which seem to be trending towards the president. I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe these pollsters know much more than I do. And while I still think in my heart of hearts that those states are still kind of toss-ups, the fact is Romney doesn't have a lead in any of them. And I would, you know, I still don't know if we're still recovering from the Obama bounce from the convention. But let's wait and see what happens after October 3rd, the first debate. If the polls don't move in Romney's favor, if in fact that the president maintains his lead or even slightly increases it, then I don't see, you know, what could possibly change that could bring Romney back. Look, as a political junkie, obviously I want this race to be competitive. I want it to go on, but reality at some point has to set in. And if there's a trend towards the president, I mean, it'll be tough to change that, you know, with the weeks left in the campaign.
Ken Rudin, our guest this hour, NPR's political junkie. For 20 years, he's been the eyes and ears of political coverage as political editor. He has also started in 2011 part of the network's State Impact Project. It's a local national journalism initiative adding editorial resources and reporters to NPR member stations in all states, better informing the public about the impact that the actions of state governments have on citizens and communities. You hear him on Talk of the Nation on Wednesdays in the Political Junkie segment. He also has a weekly Political Junkie column on NPR.org. And you can find his latest column at npr.org/blog/politicaljunkie. More phone calls momentarily for Ken. Here's our number, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. And you can also send us a tweet at K. Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A reminder to you, Wednesday at 10, we're launching our Back to School Book Club. The conversation will be on Common Sense by Thomas Paine, and there's more information about all of this at our show page. Go to WPR.org and click on Kathleen Dunn, or you can go to our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and learn more about the book club. Lindsay in Middleton, hi.
Hi. I was just calling. I had a couple points. One was about the caller a few callers ago that talked about that it was a protest that took the embassy in Libya, which was not what happened. That Hillary Clinton stated that, yes, there were protests going on about the film, but also that was a separate, and it was a terrorist attack. They used the word terrorist attack. I don't think there's any confusion about that. And then the second was this, reading about Romney's tax returns this weekend, and the statement that he made back in August that said, you know, if I ever didn't pay the, or if I ever paid less, or what was it, more than what I should have, then I'm not qualified to be the president. And then, of course, he didn't claim the full charitable amount, and so that he would have paid the 13.6% that he had previously stated that he paid. So, I mean, you know, once again caught in a lie, I don't understand how people still find this relevant, that he can't really seem to put two facts together.
Ken?
Well, you know, that has really been, I mean, a lot of the themes we've heard in these calls today in the show is that why is Obama ahead? And we point to the economic conditions and the numbers and say, why, you know, why is this happening? And they were just questions about Romney that it just, you know, we say that we don't want professional politicians as running for president. We want businessmen. We want somebody with outside kind of experiences. And that was supposed to be the Romney strong suit. But ultimately, with all these questions about taxes, about the Cayman Islands and all this thing, I mean, it just puts more and more doubts into voters' minds about who this guy is. Now, ultimately, should that be determining who is the next president? Some people say yes. Some people say no. Some people say that my future, my family's future, my family's economic future should be more important. But again, you know, somebody said, you know, how do, what I forget who it was who called earlier, was talking about, you know, I think it was Sam who said, what are the kind of things that make you decide if you're undecided? And part of it is this comfort factor. And if Romney just says one answer about taxes and another that's, you know, another number the next day, lying to me is not a word I throw out often. And I, you know, to say that, as the earlier caller said, that Obama lied about the embassy and Romney's lying about his taxes, I'll let the negative commercials use those words. But there's just some disappointing and uneven pronouncements from the candidates that just, you know, puts pause in the voters who are trying to decide whom to support.
It seems to me as though that line of attack on him will work well for the Democrats. The fact that, and maybe it will prompt a serious discussion about who pays what in this country, but when you look at tax rates, there is something. A lot of people, you know, who are firefighters or teachers or whatever, will look at that and say, wait a second, there's something a little wrong here. Why is my rate so much higher? If I were the Democrats, I would pound on that theme because I think it may resonate. It appears to be resonating.
Well, yes, yes, it does. But you could also make the case that Romney's 14.1% of whatever he's paying is not the lowest of the low. I mean, he could pay much lower.
No, I know.
And
right.
We don't. And I, as far as I know, if you want to have a class warfare battle in this country, that's fine. I don't think it's terrible that people should make a lot of money. Or you know, it's not that he got the money was not inherited. He didn't get his money from George Romney, his father, the governor of Michigan, and all that stuff. I mean, he did it through his business connections. I don't like the throwing around. Like, look, Harry Reid stood up on the floor of the Senate and said, somebody told me that he hasn't paid taxes, you know, since 1066. I mean, you can just throw these things out and the Democrats do a very good job of it. But that, you know, enough already. And who's, you know, who has the vision for the future? Look, I'm not saying Romney does have the vision for the future. I'm not saying he doesn't. But it would be nice if we could focus on the things that really, really matter. You know, it's one thing that we focused on for a while that everybody thought would matter was when he picked Paul Ryan as his running mate. And everybody said that's going to be a determining factor. But this proved, as it has proved all the times, except maybe for Lyndon Johnson in 1960, that the vice president really ultimately doesn't matter that much. We love Geraldine Ferraro, and she lost 49 out of 50 states with Walter Mondale. We made fun of Dan Quayle, and yet Bush and Quayle won 40 out of 50 states in 1988. So Paul Ryan was going to be this lightning rod. He was going to get the conservatives out to vote. He was going to be, the focus was going to be on Medicare and how it's killing seniors. I mean, whatever you want to say. But ultimately, who is Paul Ryan? I've forgotten. I forgot that he was running. I forgot that he was in the race. And ultimately, it's about the presidential nominees.
Jim wants to talk about Paul Ryan from Fox Point. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, my first question is this for Ken. Who was Labor Secretary under Woodrow Wilson? I've always wanted to do that. I always wanted to play Stump the Chumps with you.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I really love your bowl sessions with Neil Conan, but he can be a little barbaric at times.
I'd love that.
Okay,
question.
I'll wait till nighttime for this.
I'm guessing Gaylord Nelson. No, I have no idea.
If you talk to people like I've talked to Mike Murphy and people who are very influential Republican pollsters, he still asks why didn't he choose Portman? And so, you know, Ohio was so critical. I still don't understand why he didn't choose Portman. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Well, again, it's a good question, Jim, and I mean, the question is whether VPs mean that much, but Portman was my prediction for the same reasons. He didn't have the lightning rod. He didn't have Medicare and Medicaid written all over his back. He was around for a long time. He's a good debater. I mean, Portman is still a very influential person in this campaign. He will be Romney's sparring partner in the debate practices. So maybe Portman, you know, if Romney wins because of the debates, Portman, you know, played a big, big difference after all. But you know, I mean, you know, it's not the thing with Ryan. It's not only just the Medicare stuff. Everybody mocked the stuff that Todd Akin said about abortion and that, you know, I'm against abortion, even including rape and incest. I'm an absolutist on that. Paul Ryan is the same way on abortion. And that may be fine for some people. But again, it's the kind of positions that if you're trying to win crossover voters, if you're trying to win independent centrist voters, Paul Ryan is not going to help you with that. If it was to solidify your base, then Romney was in bigger trouble than we thought because he should have had those Republicans on his side from the beginning. I don't know if Paul Ryan was a mistake. I still think that Portman would have been a better candidate. But having said that, I watched Portman at the Republican convention, and you know he didn't excite the crowd. But maybe that's what you want. You want somebody who's respected, who's smart, who is solid and doesn't have that kind of controversy behind you. Again, I don't know what it would have meant. Romney still could win Ohio, but Portman would have helped more, I certainly.
And yet there are some who would say that Mitt Romney needs to be more like Paul Ryan, and then he would do better.
Well, in what way? I mean, Romney... the funny thing is, when you think of Romney during the debates, I thought he was a very, very effective debater. I thought that every time there was a momentum of Rick Santorum or Newt Gingrich or something like that, Romney would just put a stop to it with a very effective debate performance. But Obama's a good orator, too. He hasn't had a real debate in a long time, but he knows his stuff, and I kind of think that, there's always an expectation game when it comes to debating anyway. Everybody thought that Al Gore would wipe the floor with George W. Bush.
Right.
And it didn't really happen. I don't think anything really changed that much. But the fact that great advantage that Gore was supposed to have never came to happen.
Jim, thanks for the call. Tanya in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi there. My question is about the reliability of the polls. Because what I remember from Governor Walker's recall election is that the exit polls were really showing that it was a very tight race, and then when the actual numbers came in, it wasn't as close to what we were seeing. And even I remember one of the TV correspondents just being shocked by the result.
Well, there's a difference between...
My response off the air.
Okay.
Tanya, that's a fair question. There's a difference between exit polls and the pre-election polls. And I think if you're talking about exit polls, these are what people are saying as they're leaving the voting booth. Remember in 2004, the early exit polls showed John Kerry with a big lead over President Bush. And everybody said, oh, my goodness, Kerry's going to win this thing. You can't always rely on exit polls. But I thought the polls on the recall were pretty much close. I think if I recall... That's not a bad joke. I mean, it is a bad joke. But prior to the recall vote, polls had Walker with 51-52%, and I think he wound up winning with 52-53%, not too dissimilar from when he was reelected in 2010. So I mean, when he was elected in 2010. So I don't know. I think the polls have been better than they have been in the past, and there have been some, you know, the famous Dewey beats Warren. Dewey beats Warren. Dewey beats Truman, Chicago Tribune headline of 1948. But polling has gotten much, much better. I kind of think of, as we saw in 2008, what you're seeing is perhaps really much what it is out there, unless there's some undercurrent of change of opinion that's going to affect the race at the last second. But again, something big is going to have to happen for that to happen.
Kay is next in Green Bay. Hi, Kay.
Hi. my opinion is if you want to make this election 100% fair, first of all the lobbyists should be gotten rid of. I think they're all a bunch of crooks. And why do we still have the Electoral College?
Well,
okay, Kay.
Well, we I can't believe with 4 minutes to go we're going to talk about this, because that is the Electoral College. We can talk about lobbyists later, but Electoral College is a big, big issue. People say, well, why should these little states have such importance? The fact is, if you look at where Obama's and Romney's schedule, they're not in the big states. They're in Iowa, they're in Nevada, they're in New Hampshire, they're in Colorado. And why? Because they're big? No, because they're swing states. If all votes were counted equal, then they would be everywhere. They would be in California and Texas and New York. But the small states, you need a constitutional amendment to get rid of the Electoral College. And the small states, they know that their influence would be completely diminished, if not wiped out, with the loss of Electoral College. Nobody would ever come to New Hampshire or Iowa. Why should they? Because, that's not where the votes are. So they will fight to keep the Electoral College forever, to their last dying breath. And that's that's one of the reasons why it's not going away.
Thank you, Kay, very much for the call. And finally,
we could have a whole show on Electoral College, though, and we probably should. Matter of fact, why don't you cancel the second hour and let's talk about that?
Because we have an important topic that nobody's talking about the second hour, that somebody better, so we should. Anything you'd like to say about the Milwaukee Brewers, Ken?
Look, they were counted out. They got rid of their best player. I think, look, as a Yankee fan, we haven't won the World Series since 2009. I'm going through terrible withdrawal here, so it's kind of tough.
Okay. All right, Ken. Well, this has been a pleasure. It always is.
And I always liked Hank Aaron and Eddie Matthews. So they were great for the Brewers, weren't they? Did they play for the Brewers? I don't remember.
Hank Aaron was the best, yeah.
And Eddie Matthews was the Secretary of Labor in the Woodrow Wilson administration.
Oh, you found it. Who was it?
Yeah, I looked it up, yeah.
Eddie Matthews.
Eddie Matthews, yeah.
Really?
No, Eddie Matthews was the third baseman for the Milwaukee Braves.
I thought maybe there wasn't Eddie Matthews. I was about to say, isn't that weird? All right. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you.
Bye. Ken Rudin, political junkie for NPR, our guest this hour for All Things Political. Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers produced this program. Thanks to both of them. Thanks for your calls, everybody. News ahead and another interesting hour.